This is Dr. Patty Shelton, and you are listening to the LongevIQ podcast. We discuss anti-aging and longevity science and how to benefit from it so we can all live long, healthy, happy lives. Just before we get started, a quick medical disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or to provide or replace medical advice. Please use this information to educate yourself as much as possible and share this information with a qualified health practitioner that you trust. In this episode, we'll talk about certain aspects of health and aging in women that are not always the first to come to mind. However, these are essential pillars of a long, healthy, and happy life that we should all consider. Couples may find it helpful to listen to this episode together, as it can help increase awareness and better understand and relate to each other. Our guest in this episode is Dr. Valencia Rey, MD, a functional medicine physician who specializes in mind, body, spirit, anti-aging, and holistic medicine. Based on her own life journey and her medical background, Dr. Rey is on a mission to share these life-changing insights and help guide women on their journey towards vibrant health. Also joining us today, as always, is Amir Ginsberg, the founder of LongevIQ. Welcome, Dr. Rey. Such a pleasure having you here. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me here. You know, I always like to share information, Patty, and help others to be able to live a more vibrant life. It brings me a lot of warm fuzzy.
Thanks for joining us. Maybe you want to start a little bit, talk about your inspiration for creating a program specifically for women and kind of what inspired you to go that path.
Yeah, it's just been like a lifelong unfolding kind of thing. You know, I didn't grow up saying, I'm going to start a women's group and, you know, et cetera. But what I did do when I was younger, I was always naturally fascinated with health and self-empowerment. It started with me. I mean, it started with curiosity. And I did have this kind of curiosity. I would look up at the stars, as corny as that sound, but it just seemed like there's this big secret, what's the cosmos, you know, secrets of the universe kind of thing. And so as I was heading into adolescence and those years, things began to get turbulent, emotionally turbulent. Some of the insecurities I had very young because of some family dynamics and being teased and, you know, et cetera, within my family by older brothers and some other dynamics going on. You know, I had this kind of baggage coming out of early childhood. And then I'm going into those turbulent, you know, hormonal years. While I had this kind of natural leadership ability that I figured out very, very early, and that was still very much present, I would go through this kind of wanting to help and lead. And yet I had this inner story going on. So that kind of led to being curious about, in a way, the secrets of the universe. And I started intuitively having some insights about where I wanted to go a bit. It wasn't really to be a doctor yet at that point. It had more to do with business. And I started it in my teens, being focused on independence and that as a way to be secure, quote unquote. And that opened the door to a lot of pitfalls in the future, where unconsciously I had told myself a story about lack of, like, not trusting the universe, not trusting people. And it had more to do with my protection of my emotions, like being hurt emotionally. So early on, I had this encounter with emotion as something to be aware of and something that, frankly, I didn't like in the beginning, because I wasn't getting a lot of, you know, from the home situation, a lot of joy and connection. Now, that's not to say I had a bad family or anything. I think that overall they were good, you know, humans. They just didn't know what they didn't know. And these things are perpetuated not only generationally, but in our society at large. You know, there's a lot of relationship disconnection, and we are disconnected from our inner world because at an early age, we're driven to focus on the outer world. You know, at an early age, we're shamed from having emotion, more so with men, but women too, you know, in terms of crying and being teased. That's why I got teased a lot. And, you know, I was emotional and easy to cry and sensitive when I was young from my family. I didn't have much trouble. Didn't have that much trouble in the outer world. You know, so I had it backwards. So the outer world was a little friendlier, but you know, what you start with at home, you carry into the outer world, that same expectation. And you find yourself unconsciously selecting people who reflect to you those who you're most familiar with. So I had to actually break that one too, where putting myself in a group that didn't get me, see me, or look at me like the deer in the headlight when I would say something that was different, right? So ultimately, I stumbled into medical school through a cosmic guidance, because honestly, it happened at the 11th hour. And while I was going through medical school, which I got in very quickly, I was barely 21 when I started medical school. I was like, how did I get here? But, you know, ultimately that unfolded too. So it's like my life is a combination. I've been aware of that. It's almost like a combination of fate versus destiny. And sometimes it might be the 11th hour that I get on the path, but I keep tracking toward this kind of destiny, which is as time went on and I became more comfortable with who I am and got that old messaging out of my mind that somehow something's wrong with women in particular, you know, that's actually what was my greatest insecurity. Like, people think because you're a person of color or whatever, that somehow you're insecure about that. No, I didn't have any insecurities, you know, around that. It was nothing wrong with me. Shoot. I knew it wasn't a color thing. It had more to do with, and that was the way I was raised. My father certainly helped us to have that kind of like, yeah, we're good enough. But it had to do more with, as a woman, you know, on the other hand, that same father was kind of misogynistic because of his religion, right? You know, the religion part is what did it. And so I had this thing where at first I thought if I ever had children in the first place, you know, I didn't know that, you know, having a girl might be a problem. And I'm like, one day it woke up and said, why do I think that? And ultimately, even my father came around and he was so happy he had his two daughters. And, you know, he had four boys and two daughters. But even that got reconciled. So as I'm growing and growing, I'm realizing like, wow, women really have a lot of stuff dumped in our psyche. And we have more health problems, partially because of that, and partially because we are used as consumers, you know, for the most part. And it just, you know, I've come to realize, because one of the things I did when I finally got the courage to get off the beaten trail and think outside the box and honor my intuition and honor my right brain and honor my heart, I started studying other esoteric ancient practices or insights, or being open to new intuitive downloads and not just the same old past stuff, you know, that's not working. And I found things like human design, and I started honoring the birth chart of your, you know, astrology, be it Vedic or Western, you know, it just depends on how you blend them or whatever. And one of the best things I did too was 30 years ago, I started doing shadow work on myself and honoring my emotions. And then over that same period of time, there were obviously those who were developing new tools for such a time as this, like human design, like the gene keys. And I happened to be fortunate enough to stumble into those pathways in the past 7 years it's been. And now I weave them together into, and there's also something called internal family systems therapy that I was unconsciously doing on myself in this 30 year period. And that is actually a body of work now too. And blending them in such a way that I'm literally doing holistic, like literally physical, emotional, you know, mental, spiritual, in a whole way. So I've created this program, Well Whole, W-H-O-L-E, WISE. And the word whole is actually derived, it's interconnected with the word health, you know, unhealthy. And so where humanity is in so much pain and suffering and premature aging, et cetera, because we divide ourselves into pieces, you know, P-I-E-C-E. And we need to come back to this wholeness. And the consumer industry is keeping us divided in pieces. Go over here for this, go over here for that. And even when you go over here for that, they're not connecting anything. And, you know, all this technology, coming out that's not really disrupting anything. From my point of view, it's allowing you to measure stuff, but it's not giving you any solutions. Okay. What good does it know? What good does it does to know all of these different digital patterns if you don't have the resources and the knowledge and the wisdom on how to change them, right? And that's what I noticed, because I get bombarded with, here's a new tool, and none of these tools really are telling me, as if I didn't have my functional medicine knowledge base, I wouldn't necessarily know what to do with that necessarily if I'm still going to the same system that is disease focused, right? It might just have me on more medications. that's not funny, but I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for sharing about your journey. You work kind of specifically with women. Are there any particular aspects that you see being particularly important to women in terms of staying vibrant and vital as they age, aging well, having a long life, things that are women need to pay particular attention to or unique things?
Yeah, I'd say even before the obvious, like your food is medicine, like doing some moderate exercise. Don't go to the gym and knock yourself out. That's not necessarily helpful, especially depending on your body type and where you are, because you might stir up more inflammation. The other obvious things, sleep and lifestyle, we can talk about that in more detail, what that I mean by that. But one thing, again, that is totally overlooked is your mindset. Like, who do you think you are? And I mean that, like, who do you think you are? Seriously, because if you don't really have a sense of worth that's intrinsic, I am good enough because I breathe. I am not a mistake. I did not, cause the fall of humanity. And that's certainly my strong opinion. If you don't understand the balance between the principle, not the gender, the principle of the masculine, feminine, of the yin, of the yang, of the right brain, of the left brain, that creates the whole. They're not polar opposites. They're part of a whole. And to the degree that you're in a society that is totally honoring the fire, the yang, the masculine, but even that in its honoring is really like a shadow form of it. It's not even the pure form of it. So everything is like out of whack, and it's all about overactivity, never resting, staying externally focused on the five senses instead of also honoring the sixth sense or the heart. And by the way, everyone, when I use these terms, this will be really, really clear. I'm not talking about biological sex, and I'm not talking about gender either. I'm talking about cosmic, like, life principle, the balance of the yin and the yang, the receptive and the active. And men and women have both. If you have a right brain and a left brain, you have access to both. And so if you are a normal human brain, being with a normal human brain, you have a right hemisphere and a left hemisphere. But if you are under the conditioning of the world, you're over in the left. And how does that apply to women? Well, now, if we don't realize that left brain is really like, let's say, it does like house this container called the ego of the story of who you think you are, like autobiographical memory. Ego is not bad, it's just part of the nervous system, and we need it to be to individuate. But when we don't understand that we are self-responsible for navigating our emotions, for the story we tell ourselves, then programs can get fed in there. And if you, if we live in this world, it's pushing us over in this left brain, active separation, linguistic thesis. The left brain sees in pieces. It doesn't see the whole scope. And we as women, like, totally buy into that. It's almost like we really get it hard in a way, because we do have more connections in a way to this heart side of us, naturally, in a way, and that's that kind of maternal, nurturing potentially there. Although nothing's ever true across the board. There are men, I think, are better mothers than their wives. I've watched it happen, so to speak. And so I think as women, if we would stop trying to, number one, buy into this paradigm that is keeping us not only separated from our heart and the okayness of being female, but it's also pitting us against each other as well. All this external like competition that goes on, truth be told. It takes us out of our self-love. And so we're not aware of the emotional side of ourselves and the self-acceptance side of ourselves. If we could blend that into our awareness, that would really help women, because I think women, because we have this ability, most women have this extra ability to multitask or see different holistic pictures. They might be because, you know, you do have this kind of greater connection between heart and brain and higher heart intuition, potentially. I mean, men do too. It really affects our health and our relationship and our connection and our self-worth and our self-love and all of that. I think women just have more of a conditioning push toward codependency, you know, like having to over give without, it's almost like you pat on the back. If you're a woman and you're serving everybody but yourself, oh, you're so wonderful. You're so wonderful. While the man goes off and plays golf. So you have to have enough self-love and self-confidence to have clearer boundaries. And that will go a long way toward you finding what's important to you and your health and your self-care and all of those things too. And I think you need a role model, or you need someone to encourage you and not to beat up men. I mean, that's the other thing. I don't believe in beating up men at all. I've been, you know, married for all these years. I have a son. You know, I respected my father. I grew up with four brothers. It's humanity. This is a humanity issue, and we have to resolve it. And together, and women, I think, potentially could lead, but we have to do our own personal work. Why do I say I think women can lead? Well, because women do tend to have a lot of influence over the health of the next generation, or, you know, the health in the home and buying of food, or, you know, that sort of thing, that the relational side tendencies. If we could get our self relationship together, then maybe the world can certainly, we can help the world easier as well.
And a beautiful message there about how anyone of any sex, any gender, it's important to honor both the feminine and the masculine energies that everyone contains.
Yes. That's, to me, is this the most important pressing issue, is this respect of the masculine, feminine in all people and within ourselves first and with all people in between us, and stop having a preferential bias that goes on.
Honoring that balance. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the health aspects that you touched on a little bit. You started to mention food as medicine. So maybe talk a little bit about how, what's important when you're thinking about eating for longevity, eating for vibrance and health. What are some things you might pay attention to?
Okay. So I based the five pillars of my Well Whole Wise program on these five principles. And the first one is food as medicine. So I'll just tell you what the five are. So they begin with, I call it the 5-R approach. So it's like the food is medicine is under the category of re-educate. So there's this whole re-education that we need. A lot of things we're eating, we think are healthy. It's really not. It's actually causing a lot of our problems. If it looks like something and it's not, and it's processed, it's not good for you. In general. Okay. The second one would be recalibrate. So it's really helping us to understand our hormones and our adrenal glands and the tie-in to the circadian rhythms. And when we are able to understand this dynamic and how it affects even our energy centers, our mitochondria, which is very tied into aging, et cetera, then we can start to understand the things we need to do that support the hormones, even beyond food, you know, just in terms of our mindset or lifestyle, because these are all interconnected. It's not five separate steps. Okay. They're all interconnected. The next one would be revise your story. So you have re-educate, recalibrate, and now revise. And this is a whole mental, emotional piece. It affects our epigenetics. It is literally affecting the gene expression. So it's not just about a little anxiety. What you don't know can kill you, okay? It's not like, oh, if I just repress and deny my emotions, they'll just be back there in the background. No, they're eating away at your physiology if they're low frequency emotions like fear, worry, ruminating, anxiety excessively, or just worrying about things you can't control. So that's there is a way of dealing with that in a way that's actually fundamentally empowering that people are not aware of. Then there's restoring balance, and that's that whole lifestyle approach. There is meditation to that. There is putting an emphasis on sleep and understanding sleep hygiene. It's one of the most neglected areas for many people. Oh, it's just a sleep. I used to brag about that too. Oh, I go to bed at midnight and get up at 4:30 a.m. Yikes. I probably aged myself 20 years during those years. and there was a good reason why I was doing it in a way. I was trying to juggle way too much and still have plenty of time for my children to play with them and et cetera. So I would cram a lot of things late in the evening, you know, et cetera, and then find myself going to bed at midnight. And then I get up early to try to squeeze in my meditation or my workout before I got them up at some early hour to go dashing off into the day. But you know, I would certainly rearrange some things differently now, knowing how dangerous that is and how detrimental it is to your adrenal system and, you know, your sleep, et cetera. So restoring balance, as we restore balance, it's like we literally get time back too, because our nervous system is a self-fulfilling self-fulfilling prophecy organ or, you know, system. And if you don't think you have enough time, you can waste a lot of time for one thing, but then what do you really want to focus on? That's where you really should be looking. Like, there's a lot of things on our plate that we don't have to have there, but then that goes back to the boundaries, and that goes back to self-confidence and self-esteem, the ability to say no. You know, all of those things are all interconnected. Women don't take on too much, you know, so all of that has to do with restoring your balance. I find a lot of women take care of others first, and then they never get taken care of until they break down. And then the last one is remember who you really are. And that's where the spirituality. And I have to say, for sure, that saved my life. For sure, that is actually the foundation of everything for me, is finding the spirituality that worked for me. And, you know, I have a long backdrop of religion. And parts of it worked, parts of it didn't. And I'm just one of those that believe that nobody gets to tell me what I believe. Okay. That's like the line in the sand. You don't get to tell me what I believe. And so ultimately I have to be responsible for that. And I'm really results driven. Like, if it doesn't work to improve the quality of my life or help, I'm not interested, you know, really. So practical. And if I see it works, nothing you can say that I'm going to like, okay, you said so, so I have to drop it. So at the end of the day, it just comes to like faith and core beliefs and in results, because there are principles in the universe. It doesn't matter if you believe it or not, you're not going to get the result. You know, if you think you can just go without sleep for a week and feel energetic and strong, you can believe that all you want. Chances are you're not. You're going to be sleep deprived and inflamed and et cetera. So there are principles that you just have to test for yourself, instead of it just saying, I believe because it says so. Because some of the things that, you know, things say are not even in your best interest. And that can come even down to who you think you are as a woman. If you believe that somehow, you know, you're less than, or whatever, just because you're female, then that's going to have an effect on your perception and how you perceive yourself and other women and your daughters and life and et cetera. So you got to guard your heart and mind and find the right spiritual path. But for me, that led me to understand that divinity is not just like out there. It's like I'm literally part of creation, and that divine is in all things and certainly within us. And if we can reconnect to that, it bought me a lot more, not only self-esteem, like my self-esteem is there instead of in my job title. And that is kind of, that's more of an intrinsic thing. And it also helped me to grow in my ability to let go and not need to control everything, because it's an illusion. You really don't. The only thing you can control is how you respond. You can learn how to have a consciousness that helps you to authentically respond, where you're not like squashing your feelings. You just are able to stay in a consciousness of equanimity, and you're actually able to tap into the intrinsic joy that, you know, the inner child that's always there. And if you can do that, then, you know, you can weather the storms, because the storms are going to come. It's not if, it's when. And ultimately, that spiritual foundation is what helped me to realize that the mind and my external expectations, that the world was pushing in my face and telling me to be enough or good enough or validate, was actually wrecking me in my life. And so I would say, you know, those five things: re-educate, recalibrate, revise, restore, and remember, are what we need to reclaim, okay, our power and who we really are. And then we can have more respect for each other's differences as well. You know, when we are more secure and healthy and et cetera, I can allow diversity of thought to be around me without getting triggered and all upset because you don't agree with me and et cetera. And so I think this starts with the individual when we're talking health and anti-aging and healthy relationships and all of that. But this all trickles out into the society at large. And so as you are feeling better about yourself and you don't need to be comparing yourself to everybody else and you're doing the work and making the money that you need for your heart's purpose, et cetera, then perhaps you can leave other people alone and stop trying to micromanage their life as well. And so people can find communities where they are, you know, relating to each other and not trying to control, reach over the fence and tell somebody else what to do. So I think all of this is really like a microcosm and a macrocosm, you know, it's like an organism breathing, inhaling and exhaling. So we can bring forward those things that help us with our health and aging, because right now the paradigm is creating more disease than anything.
Beautiful. The importance of honoring your own wisdom, trusting your own path.
Right. Yeah. That's really unique. You know, it's not like, oh, it works for me, so it's got to work for you too. It's a balance. You have to be willing to kind of test the waters, know yourself, and trust your intuition. You know, it'll help guide you. Yes, there are some overarching principles, but then there's also some unique aspects that may or may not apply based on your genetics and, you know, based on your design, your divine design.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about maybe some of those overarching principles, just always keeping in mind that there's individual differences and everyone needs to trust themselves. With eating patterns, one of the things that's very popular now for health and aging is intermittent fasting. How do you feel about intermittent fasting for women specifically? Is there anything maybe women need to pay attention to if they're going to try that?
Yeah, so let's combine that with food as medicine. So yeah. Like food as medicine, understanding that nature has the most wisdom of any synthetic thing we can create. And in that food system, when it's done organically and not chemicalized and sprayed to death with stuff that causes inflammation, and it's, you know, the grounds are nurtured, so we actually have sulfur in our food and the soil is, you know, given a rest and et cetera, then you're going to have these natural chemicals molecules within the food that is intelligent to match what the body needs it for. So food is medicine. And what I mean by that term even is when you're eating foods that have natural antioxidants that actually contains the minerals and supplement, I mean, the minerals and vitamins and anti-inflammatory antioxidants in them, you know, like asparagus has natural glutathione, you know, in it, et cetera, then that is going to be the best medicine in that the body will respond to it naturally and it can help the body to heal itself, which the body is very, very capable of doing. Then in the context of, you know, herbs, certain herbs are more warming. Some can be calming, anti-inflammatory, you know, like ginger can be anti-inflammatory, very much so, help with the stomach, or you know, cinnamon can be warming and antibacterial, you know, as well, that can heal gut issues and contribute to that. Plus it tastes good. And so there's that to be aware of. Then when intermittent fasting, it can be phenomenal for pre-diabetics, for example. I once had a patient, she wasn't a patient, she was in my Well Whole Wise program. So the Well Whole Wise program is not medical. We don't even use supplements, and it still works wonders. Now, some people may have real imbalances where they may need some supplements to help their tissues to, you know, regenerate and claim and heal. But it's a metabolic adjustment. It's like learning how to burn fat while still bringing in whole foods and vegetables as well. It's not like this hardcore keto, which can throw off your gut microbiome over long periods of time. And so in this program, there was a woman who was an elderly woman, actually. She was brought to the program who she didn't really have online skills, but we worked with that. And she was actually an insulin dependent pump. She was using an insulin pump. And insulin dependent, had gained weight, leg swelling, couldn't even walk, and they couldn't really keep her blood sugars out of the 500s, okay, which is quite dangerous. And she came into the program as like, just help, let me try something, I'm desperate. And within 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks or so, she had not only lost 13 pounds, she had normalized her blood sugar completely. I never even had to order a test. She was under the care of an endocrinologist, but the endocrinologist reported to her, wow, you know, your blood sugar is stable. And she was checking her blood sugar every day anyway, because she was monitoring it. And she learned some things about her mind, you know, her mindset. She did that without even supplements. It was food as medicine, it was lifestyle, it was this program that I'm referring to, Well Whole and Wise. And so part of that was intermittent fasting. You know, she had been eating what they're often told every 2 hours and et cetera. Well, intermittent fasting essentially is at least 12 hours between your last meal and your next day meal, breakfast. The range of ideal times can vary from person to person, but somewhere between 12 and 16 usually. So there's an 8 hour window where you may have two meals, but don't eat like every hour. Even then, it's like you eat, you give yourself, if you're going to eat more than one meal, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours, it gives the food time to transit, the digestion to rest. And it allows for autophagy, which is like the old dead cells to be disposed of. And some of the energy, instead of it constantly going to eating, it's going to revitalizing your body and cleaning up debris, you know, so to speak. Also, it gives your body a chance to burn excess fat. And this kind of low-level ketone, the brain can run off of ketones. You don't have to measure your ketones, because in the way I, with my program, it's not a keto diet. You can have protein, but you're going to eat healthy fats. And you're not even going to take in excessive amounts of fat. You're actually going to do a lot more water use when you cook, which when I first went from not knowing anything, you know, what I was doing, to going into keto, to finding functional medicine. And then I found with keto that, number one, I would wither up into nothing if I didn't throw a potato or like a sweet potato or some kind of root vegetable in there. And my ketones would really go up high, because I tend to run a normal low insulin, which is a good thing. You know, for me, I don't have inflammation around the excess insulin happening, but it was also imbalancing my gut microbiome. And it was also, I do have a tendency to easily raise excessive cholesterol. Now, what is excessive cholesterol? There's really not a good pin down of that because, 50% of people who have heart attacks have a normal LDL or even a low LDL. So it's not that LDL number, it's the inflammation of the fats that we need to be looking at. But if you have like genetic tendencies that saturated fat can throw you off and saturated fat is disturbing your gut, for that reason, especially in women, it seems like it throws off the hormones more. And it may be because we have that insulin, that estrogen drop, you know, after menopause. I found that this, what I use with the Well Whole Wives program, which is allowing for qualification of vegetables into, you can eat as much as you want because they're more water-based versus some more of the starch here, and weighing the food, not counting calories. Who wants to do that for the rest of their life? And you know, how much meat and getting the meat from clean sources, that's food is medicine too, meaning cows that are happy, roaming the grass, eating their natural food that their stomach can digest, which is not grains, okay? Then the animal's not as inflamed. The animal is healthier. The animal's consciousness is better. All of that goes into food as medicine. And then in this intermittent fasting, you're having strategically set up where you're consuming your calories as well. So you're not going to wait right before bedtime to eat all your carbs necessarily here for a variety of reasons, which I teach on because some people respond in different ways. But the whole point of the intermittent fasting is to keep the system less inflammation, metabolically cleaner, that helps with the brain and clarity and burning fat and ketones. You're not going to be hungry all the time. Before I started this lifestyle and understanding these principles, I was having to carry those little processed carb bars all the time, you know, every 2 hours, or else I would get hangry. Okay. And that was because my blood sugar and adrenals were off base. Especially if you have a tendency toward, and there's a genetic basis for this in many people, high cortisol, easily excitable, and whoosh, there goes the cortisol and the epinephrine's going up. So if you have a stable food process for you, and again, that might be for some people, they might just have one meal a day. Some people might have two, or maybe that 8 hour, 10 hour window is divided into three. You have to trust the wisdom of your body too. But yeah, intermittent fasting can work miracles for diabetes, pre-diabetes. In general, it's generally a good idea for most people. And that food is medicine, getting educated around the proper oils that are fruit-based oils, like, you know, avocado and olive, and don't cook with olive because it becomes inflammatory when it's heated too high. But avoiding those seed oils, the canola, the safflower and sunflower, you know, those things are actually inflammatory because even the word vegetable is really, it's a seed oil and it's processed and it's in a plastic glass bottle. A plastic bottle, clear plastic bottle is what I mean to say, which can suck out the chemicals in the plastic into the oil, plus sunlight is, you know, potentially causing problems when you consume the oil. Yeah.
And one of the things I really appreciate about your approach is that you really value joy and play and having fun in life too. Could you share maybe about the importance of enjoying your food and even maybe specifically one of your favorite recipes, a way that you can make healthy, really nourishing food, but that's also really, really delicious to consume?
Yes. Okay. So let's see. One of the things that in order to make this lifestyle work is to get some new recipes. And, understand that, and again, this doesn't happen overnight, but you know, you just take a new recipe, but just give you some examples. I find that cauliflower is extremely versatile for one thing. And I make everything from garlic mashed potatoes that look like, you know, it's really cauliflower. And parsley is also, or parsnips is another thing that you can kind of mix in there if you want. But it's so low in carbs. And so it doesn't have, it also doesn't have lectins or, you know, other potential issues with it, or GMOs, you know, per se. And you can do, there's a potato salad, for example, I make that looks just like potato salad. And I had stopped eating potato salad until I came across this recipe, and it just looks, tastes, everything like the potato salad, but it's made with cauliflower. Another cauliflower favorite of mine that my son always wants me to make since I started making it, for example, is cauliflower dressing. I'm like, oh, cauliflower dressing. But see, I learned my original learning how to cook. Like, I have a generational background from like the Southeast, and my husband's mother was from Alabama. So I actually learned some of the holiday cooking, you know, from her. And she had this kind of dressing where, well, she couldn't tell you how to measure it, but you just put this in it and you put that in it. And I knew how it tasted. So I said, okay, well, what do I put in it? And I just whipped it up until it tasted like hers. Okay. So it was really good. Well, I did the same thing with this cauliflower dressing, but the cauliflower dressing looks just like the regular dressing, but you're using, it's called cornbread cauliflower dressing, but you're just using, you're using certain like Italian sausages in it a little bit, and that could be chicken or whatever, but you don't have to put anything, but the ingredients in it and the seasoning in it and the cauliflower takes on, takes that on. And I use some of the, when I'm boiling like the neck and the giblets, et cetera, the turkey and the seasoning, I do it the same as I did the old fashioned way. I'm putting that in there. And then you're even putting a little bit of Parmesan on it. It is so good. I mean, it is so good. And we only make it at Christmas and Thanksgiving in general, but that's something like my, you know, family looks forward to, because it tastes like real, like homegrown dressing, not like something you get off the store, you know? And so that's good. And then I can sometimes make like keto recipe with almond flour, or breads with almond flour, cassava, coconut flour mixed in together, so it doesn't have the gluten in it, and all organic ingredients. So using monk fruit to sweeten, or sometimes stevia in certain drinks or something like that. So there's that piece around. You can play with your food and soups. I just, you know, get a Vitamixer, just soften the sweet potato or carrot or whatever, grind it up, and you don't even have to, you could actually use a Vitamixer and just put the base in there and put the vegetables in and season it the way you want and cook it. And but when, instead of using like cream, I tend to use like coconut milk or you know, something that's heavy like that, but it doesn't have the dairy if you don't have good dairy access, or, you know, etc. So those are some of the things that, you know, I don't feel deprived if I want something sweet, or there's just different things you can do that's not high sugar and is not taking in flour. And I substitute with monk fruit in general anyway. And so I don't, like, I even have this keto bread. I forget the brand. It's made out of almond flour. It only has maybe four ingredients. So it's not like this list of things you can't name, like on gluten-free products. it's actually if you want to use bread, it's pretty darn good. You can make it easily, of course, if you want, I suppose, but I don't want to do everything like that. I would say anti-aging, one of the big things that's left out is play. And I would like to say something about relationships after I mentioned the play here, because I think that's important to help too. But play. So speaking of play, I had noticed in myself consciously that there was a part of me that would just jump out at times that was so playful. And people who even knew me in a way or been around me for a while, they would look at me like that, you know, like. And I had repressed this very playful side of me. You know, like there was a time where we were on our fifth, we've been married 33 years now, but this was on the fifth wedding anniversary. And my husband didn't realize that I could even draw until near that time. We had been married 5 years and he didn't realize I could even draw. I had stopped playing piano and we were on a cruise for that fifth anniversary with a group of people. We were out on the ocean in the middle of the night and they had a karaoke. And I was like, this little part of me was like, I want to play. And so I'm like trying not to, all of a sudden, I just found myself like being carried over to the stage and I got on the stage and I started doing Aretha Franklin Respect karaoke. And my husband said he was stunned. We had dated 2 years and had been married 5 and he never saw that part of me. That's sad. And then two ladies jumped up on the stage and got behind me and did backup. It was so fun. And I've done crazy little things like that periodically. Well, in the years now that I've been studying like Gene Keys in particular, and this relates to shadow work, is that when I say make friends with feelings as part of your health and well-being, I'm literally serious about that. I mean, that's just not a cute phrase because in our mind, when we tell ourselves that emotions are scary and bad and to be repressed and we're conditioned that way, it creates like this angst and tightening in our body. And yet there's a process that when you loosen them up, the natural joy within you that's already there, it's just buried, can come forward. And you can also get a grip on getting your body and mind in this state of equanimity where when life happens, it doesn't have to throw you off. You know, it doesn't have to. Sure, sadness and grief is real and you can feel it, but you don't have to drown in those emotions. And when you have this kind of state of more of a transcendent connection to your spirit, the story and the response is very different than if you have this story of I need to control it and make the external world align with me, which you really can't do anyway. So there's parts of ourselves, which, you know, Carl Jung was one of the ones who made it popular, but this is a more of an ancient principle that is in the subconscious that is, you know, based on security, love, and self-esteem, and it's not in the highest frequency or vibration. And so therefore it tends more toward being grabbed by fear or what's going on in the outer world. And to the degree that we're able to, number one, access this part of ourselves and actually bring it more into the gift, we can actually access some of the parts of ourselves again. So I'm leading up to this part that sits in what's called the spiritual portion of this Gene Keys profile of mine. And the shadow is seriousness and the gift is playfulness. And is sitting right in this important part called the spiritual quotient, you know, the heart. Well, that part of me, as I have really owned it and I can see it in black and white, it's like, there it is. That explains that because that is truly more who I am instead of this serious person, you know, constricted so much. And so while over time I have been unwinding the seriousness, just having that realization and having the tools to be able to access that part of me, you know, consciously allowed me to be able to bring that gift of playfulness and delight and attunement to nature and just noticing things in more of this kind of delightful way, so to speak. Not only did it help me and help, of course, reduce stress, and helped me to be more willingness to even play like some of the games with other women that I used to play as a girl, like double dutch. You know, I've been doing that lately a little bit. It's this this organization that's become national for, you know, women 40 plus, the double dutch club, whatever. Now they do other things besides double dutch. There's other things you can get out there and play, but I get so much like, you know, joy and playfulness and connection and relationship connection. And that's one thing that I attribute also to marriage and healthy relationship is being able to relax, being able to play, being able to recreate, you know, recreation, et cetera, that we serious adults, you know, we cross this line artificially and now we can't play anymore. Well, that's going to affect your health and that's going to affect, you know, your stress levels, et cetera. So I would say that's where some of that mental, emotional and mental agility can come in, that we can revise our story. You know, we can actually, and this is a neuroscience fact, we are creating autobiographical memory, the story of who we think we are. So if you say, I can't play because I'm an adult and I'm going to look and feel foolish, who says? That's what you're telling yourself, and that may be what other people say. But as I say, maybe you need to surround yourself with people who have a more expansive outlook on life and stop putting yourself in a box worrying about, you know, the other people. I'm not saying that you bring it to your job, but on your private time, you should be able to honor your heart, and that will contribute to your health and well-being. It can also help you in your relationships, because if you're working together, especially when you're working together, you're less likely to outgrow each other when you're both expanding and growing and, you know, dealing with your stuff, so to speak. And that is the secret sauce for me, certainly, is I was persistent. And that's that heart devotion, I guess, personal transformation. But I was persistent about, we need to address, we need to take responsibility for, we need to use these tools to help ourselves evolve. And what I found, the theory was right, because I feel that our relationship is better now than it was 20 years ago. And how do you explain that? It has to do with this kind of growing together, evolution and willingness with compassion, because, you know, beating yourself up is not going to help. Just with compassion, know that you're here to learn and grow and reach your greater potential.
So beautiful. I love seeing the videos of you playing on the playground, like a little girl, like you said. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you saw that. And see, if you put it out to the universe, that's what's so amazing to me too. As I was going through this journey this summer to, like, I've been working with shadow work like 30 years. But as I got these tools, especially the Gene Keys, it gave me greater and greater access to what I couldn't see in myself, because doing shadow work on yourself is certainly difficult. And I was doing it on myself because I could never ever find anybody else who could mirror back. You know, that regular psychotherapy, et cetera, would not work. And then ultimately, as I was getting to the point where I was working on this, this aspect of this particular part of me, okay, and I was all in, I said, as I was reflecting one day, you know, okay, play. I used to love double dutch when I was a little girl. I would love to just see if I can still jump it, see if I can still play. It feels like I probably could, and I'd love to do that. And, but you need three people. You need two people to turn and know how to turn, and then you can jump. Maybe 2 days after this, and I just said, okay, so I'm gonna put it out to you, universe. I want to play double dutch. You know, 2 days after that or something, someone I know from Chicago where I grew up, you know, I'm in California now, I happen to see this post go by. And, you know, I'm not on Facebook a lot or anything. I'm mostly on there for groups and for a certain connection. And ultimately, she came across the screen. And I was like, wow, she's jumping double dutch. And so I reached out to her, and make a long story short, as it turns out, there's this national organization that's been around for 5 years or something called the 40 Plus Double Dutch Club. And they're all over the place. And I looked up the one there and found it. And sure enough, there it was. So see, things are out there and we don't even know it, but ask and you shall receive. So I asked and I was guided to it. And yeah, so it's like, not only can I still jump it, I jump like I never stopped. And that was, what, 50 years ago. I mean, there's some long period of time it's been, but it's in my body because I loved it so much. hula hoops, all of that, can still do all of that. And so why do I have to stop now? You know, you have to use your judgment if you have bad knees or you have, but I don't. And I would do it like hours and hours and hours like I did when I was a child, but it brought so much joy to be able to do that again.
And you sort of just alluded to not only the importance of moving your body, but the importance of finding a balanced practice of movement. So maybe talk a little bit about creating an exercise or movement program, like a habit that will work for a woman's particular body.
So with movement, a little bit every day matters. Stretching before bed, or when you wake up in the morning, you notice you might be a little stiffer. Then those would be good times to even do, if you did 10 minutes of yoga stretches, downward dog, sun salutation. Occasionally I'll take a break and just turn on music to dance to, that I like to dance. Because when I was younger, I was very athletic and could compete athletically easily, but I preferred dance for the most part. And that still takes a lot of athleticism, but it also kind of, like the music can move me. So it's not, the point of this is to let go and relax, not to see how good you can dance or not. And then there's, you're by yourself, right? You can just let it rip. And then there's the singing is actually very parasympathetic. Humming is very parasympathetic. And those kinds of things help to release tension. I'm about to go on an endeavor to also really look at the meridian balances, like in the Chinese acupuncture and cupping, they talk about yin and yang deficiencies, et cetera. Exploring that part, because your nervous system can also, especially if you've been an intense person in the past, could still be holding muscle memory to make it easier for you to trigger into. Even excitement can trigger into stress so easily because your nervous system is so wired tight. And things like that, fascia massage, myofascial release, craniosacral work can help to release stored up tension in the body that is affecting the aging process in your joints and in your tissues. Your emotions certainly play a big role in that frequency of your tissues in your body as well. So, you know, as I hopefully have demonstrated, a lot of our limitations are self-inflicted because we are telling ourselves stories that we can't be, do, or have. And if we take that part of ourselves and put it into the equation for health, that in and of itself can help the aging, but then it also tends to help your self-esteem, how you feel, and that's going to affect who you attract in terms of who, in terms of your relationships, or maybe even your existing relationships, what you're willing to tolerate or not, or work together and grow. So all of those things are dynamics. And if we stop again, cutting ourselves and our lives up into these little pieces, then we can better, you know, come together in this holistic way. So the Well Whole Wise program is a program that can go beyond borders and teach people to empower themselves. And while I do teach about supplements and I do teach about how to do intermittent fasting and sound healing and yoga and have other people come in, other teachers, like I don't teach yoga, but I, you know, I can talk about it a little bit. I just can kind of do it, but I'm not trying to be a yoga teacher. So you can have people to bring their collaborative skills to the table as well, art therapy. You know, these are things that the magic of being online can actually be a positive thing, because you can do some live events, but you can reach people around the world. You know, in some of my Gene Key communities, I'm interacting with people in New Zealand and Germany and England all the time, like once a week. So we didn't have that before, and that really breaks down cultural lines and seeing how much we really do have in common, you know, as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said something that I think would be really lovely to expand on a little bit, which was, it doesn't matter whether you're singing well or not. It doesn't matter whether you're dancing well or not. The point is just to do it. So maybe talk a little bit more about how people can bring creativity into their lives in this way that lets go of self-judgment and just opens that channel.
Yeah. So that's actually a core of one of my, most passionate aspects about work is that who do you think you are? Because everything actually comes from that. What is the root of all evil? Self-rejection, it's when there's something about us that we're rejecting and not at ease with that causes us to be excessively greedy and holding on to things, that causes us to compare ourselves to others, and that poverty, lack, separation consciousness. That's like a computer program in the collective. You can delete the hit button, hit the delete button and start to work on that, because it really is like a software program. It's not, it's really in the mind, and the mind is going to trigger emotion. It's going to trigger physiology. It's going to create your perception. So until you are willing to learn how to optimally operate this amazing brain, take back the steering wheel of your mind, and really recreate, revise your story about your worth, it's going to be harder to do those things. But if you start at this fundamental level of realizing that pretty much almost darn near all of it, so much of what we think and believe is programmed and conditioned. You're a woman, you think like this. You're a man, you think like that. You hear that in the messaging. Once you get out of that field, you start to see like, I'm a woman and I don't believe that, so you can actually see it happening. And if you're asleep, you're just kind of caught up in it and you're just going along with the program, so to speak. But if you would break that program, realizing that loving yourself is not the same as narcissism. There are narcissists who hate themselves, okay? What the narcissist has to do, what narcissism is another word for is separation consciousness and insecurity. You can tell yourself the story that I'm better than, but still you're in fear. And you can tell yourself the story I am less than, and still you're in fear. The difference is one is hooked into this kind of aggressive, lack of compassion, and they are going to do what they need to do to survive, but they're feeling insecure. So they're just going to accumulate and accumulate, but at their core, they're insecure and they feel cut off. That's why they act like that. And on the other hand, you have the one who's the doormat and thinking, if I can just get love, if I can just serve enough and people can just, if I can just give, then somebody will love me, So both ends are like looking to control in their way. Maybe this one's trying to control material assets so that they can be loved or perceived as okay. And they're putting their value in money, which can take wings and fly away or whatever. And then this person is doing maybe the opposite. But at the end of the day, in order to feel like to have self-compassion, to be willing to be curious and creative and experiment, takes a certain degree of self-love and confidence. Or else you'll be telling your own self the story, that's ugly. Oh my God, you can't do anything right. Or, whatever. Versus saying, well, hey, that's just fun. I'm just experimenting. I'm not trying to win an award for, best picture or at the end of the day. And so that's what I would say is certainly that it's like conscious creativity. You have to be willing to experiment. You fall down, you get up, you brush your knees off. You don't have to put it in the public. It's just for you or maybe a little group that you're kind of sharing and et cetera. But all along you're doing this, you're telling yourself, this is okay. I'm playing here. I'm being innovative here. And who knows what will come out of it. Something, some new breakthrough might come out of it. Some new invention might come out of it. But it's going to be hard to do as long as you're micromanaging yourself and judging yourself. And I had it really bad. So I can say this. I know how bad. I mean, my inner self-critic was so bad at one time, I couldn't go to sleep at night. It wouldn't shut up. It was that bad. Okay. But a part of me apparently wanted me to learn how to do this naturally because I never took any psychotropic drugs. Like my body repels that kind of stuff in the first place. That's just the way I'm wired. So when I, back in the day, when I thought, well, let me go to a therapist and see if they can help me. It took maybe I was in my 20s or whatever, somewhere in there, early 30s or 20s. It took me maybe one or two visits to realize this is not going to do anything. So at the end of the day, I struck out on my own. So I can say, yes. See, remember we have neuroplasticity. You may have heard that word. The brain can be trained and we rewire itself. And to a degree, we're willing to learn the skill sets to do that. We can take back control and start to see the drama of the narrative that is manipulating you, going on out there, making you sicker and poorer and unhappier in your relationships and certainly unhappier with yourself because you're the one co-creating all this stuff.
Yeah, beautiful. I'd love to also talk a little bit about spirituality, about finding a spiritual path. So many people either have absolutely no experience of spirituality in their childhood, or maybe they had an experience with a religion that kind of didn't resonate with them or parts of it didn't work for them. So how can people go about starting to explore that and finding a path that's going to work for them?
Yeah, you know, that's actually like a third program that I have. I call it Facet Healing. And the tagline is Be You Magnificently. Okay. Be You Magnificently is you're already magnificent. It's just a matter of uncovering it. And what I mean by magnificent, you have this divine connection, you know, made in this image and likeness of this creator, which for me is a spirit. It's not male or female. Okay. I mean, it's like this principle of masculine and feminine. I mean, it's just this whole unknowable. I mean, when I say unknowable, I mean, what I mean by that is like, you can't put it in a box, but it's, from my perspective, it's certainly benevolent. And then there's free will universe. Okay. So in free will universe, a lot can go on. And ultimately, my path came through a very fundamentalist Christian religion where I had a lot of questions at a very young age where my needs were not met when it came to being a woman and asking certain questions. It was like, well, how, you know, why did this happen? Where's mommy God? You know, all of these things. Some people are more prone to pursue that path as part of their lifetime. And I'm not saying any of it's bad or good or right or wrong or anything. Some people, you know, maybe you're perfectly happy not believing in any kind of greater power. I'm not going to say that that's bad and you should go find your spiritual path. However, just looking at the state of the world, that's something's really amiss here. And frankly, for me, finding the spiritual path, it was something that intuitively as a girl, I knew that there was something out there. That's why I was talking about secrets of the universe and, you know, connecting. And I connected within my religion with Jesus because it was Christian, certainly. However, I came to see in my own, you know, again, the more self-confidence you develop, the more self-love, the more self-acceptance, the more willing you can expand your mind and take risks. While I don't believe in some of the concepts of what I grew up in, I still bring along certain concepts. And then let's say, you know, Jesus as this guy, teacher, way sure, my definitions may have shifted some, but for me, it's still a very real connection in many ways, but it's expanded. So part of it is just feeling into being like reconnecting inside and knowing that there's, you know, what's beating my heart? What's breathing my lungs? The body dies off, but yet there's something that enlivens the body. Where is that connected? And I still believe that there are certain, and this is where your intuition and your own knowing has to connect with it. There are scriptures in the major religions, parts of it, that can be uplifting and inspirational. And parts of it can be real Debbie Downers. So it can just depend on, or Downers, I'm not gonna say Debbie, but Downers. And you have to use your judgment and discernment, because it was not working for me at all to think that there was this hell and fire, brimstone, you know, God that didn't like women. And, you know, women had to take a second seat, and, or that it, this God favored certain people over others and all that. That didn't work for me. And it wasn't working. It was just causing more fear and separation. And so I think it's when you meditate and you get quiet, you go inside, that actually stimulates this awareness. Like they've done science tests, you know, on this, studies on this, the mind of God, you know, whatever, where you feel more connected to a force outside of yourself that is also inside of yourself, but to nature. Getting out in nature is a way to connect big time. Cutting yourself off from nature decreases your likelihood of finding your spirituality. So I like to look at, in this facet of healing, the graphic is a diamond. And there's this brilliant light that comes from the center of the diamond, which is that light within us. And we are like facets on the big diamond of life, you know, the universe, cosmic love, God, whatever you want to call it. And it's both. We are facets on this diamond of the self, so to speak, because if we're one with this life, which I believe we are all one with this life force, but we're individual facets too, then to the degree that we deal with our emotional wounding, that's what causes the smudges and the obscurity of the light and the shadow. It's these as shadows are not anything to be ashamed of. They're not who you really are. They're just who you think you are, okay? Or they're just energy programs in the field, like poverty, lack, and separation consciousness that get put in the field. And we all know people can be mind controlled through their nervous system. You keep showing them this, you keep showing them this, you keep saying this. And if they don't expand their vision to reject it, they think that's the way life is. And their brain will keep going toward that core belief. Once you believe it and you feel it, oh, I get old after age 40. Oh, I'm going to get sick after age 50. Some of these things, a lot of these things are self-fulfilling prophecies, because your nervous system is like, oh, okay, I can make that happen. Okay. Whereas if you believe you can create a world that is not like concentrated in the hands of 0.0001%, you know, in terms of the wealth, and have a more equitable world, if there's enough collective focus, that can be created too. So yeah, it would be just like spirituality is a way to escape victim consciousness, which is a real thing, but it's a mindset actually. And one thing that's certainly true, be it unto you as you believe. Be it unto you as you believe. And that's what the nervous system is doing for us. It's showing us what we believe and what we're co-creating on a microcosm level in our individual life. And then collectively, there's, you know, the influences of the collective get thrown in there. But ultimately, there's this source, but you have to intend to connect to that source and what that means for you. And if then it can become real. It's not just this thing you do on Sunday morning.
Beautiful. Mira, I want to give you a chance to ask any questions if you have anything that you'd like to expand on.
Oh, I could fire hundreds of questions for all these topics. One question that I'm super curious, is there any form of meditation you in particular like to do or recommend?
Yeah. So for me, my mind was so busy that I had to start with brain entrainment sound. So again, depends on where you are. If you were at the place when, like for me, I had to have a little piece of paper and pen by the chair, because every minute something would come up like, remember this, remember this, remember that. And I couldn't quiet my mind. So let's say you're one of those people. You want to get a great headphone and a high quality sound that can entrain your brain to a frequency of being more in an alpha relaxed state instead of a beta busy state. And then, you know, alpha, theta. And I literally use the back then, his name was Dr. Jeffrey Thompson. He had made these soundtracks. He's still around. And I would listen to those. And it would put me to sleep at first, certainly, because it was, you know, exhausted and all this just kind of shrunk. And then there was something else called HoloSync one time I used for a while. Once I got my brain like under control and quieted, there's different forms I've done of meditation. And for me now, it's easier just to sit still, to focus on my breath, kind of focus inside. And I can even feel my whole body vibrating more and kind of like zoning. And sometimes in that state, I'm like awake, I'm not asleep, but I feel like, you know, I have to ground. So I'm not like floating out of my body or something. And so there's some, you know, skills around just like kind of grounding. And because my whole thing is to bring heaven to earth, not to escape the body. So like thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So within the body, as this instrument of walking on the earth, bringing in this vibrational love that vibrates through the air from me. And so the meditation can be anything from a form of focusing on your belly moving and keeping the mind steady there, focusing on a breath. You may need to do some parasympathetic breathing, like slow count in a 4, pause 2, exhale 8, slow pushing out more exhales and inhales to put you more in a state of relaxation and parasympathetic. That helps to kind of, you know, bring, notch it down. But sitting up with your feet on the floor, usually you're less prone to fall asleep than if you lay down. And having a skill to say, okay, when the mind does start rushing in, you can just say, okay, thank you for sharing, go back to your breath. So you need to create a focal point, because you don't want to like get mad at your mind, shut up mind, or all of that. You just want to be able to just notice it like a cloud. And so it takes practice, but that's where I found, again, if you have that problem, the sound can really help. Like sound and trains the vibe and help the Lord will save you years of trying to just sit there and struggle. The other thing that comes up for people is emotion in meditation. Sometimes it's like, here comes the emotion. And some people shut that down. That's why they don't want to meditate, because they don't want to feel it. But there is a technique that's old. It's not new. It's new to a lot of people, but it's called emotional freedom technique or tapping. It would be great if you could sit there and for a while, a little bit, you know, give yourself at least 90 seconds to try to let it just exhale out this emotion or this anxiety that's coming out. Just say, all right, notice that anxiety, I'm releasing it. You visualize it, going away. But if after like 2 minutes, it's still like overwhelming you, et cetera, that's a great time to use the emotional freedom technique and tap it out. Not like you're trying to get rid of it, but these emotions that are repressed in our body create toxins in the body too. And this is your chance to actually release it consciously and let it go like a zip file. The EFT is allowing it through the meridians to like really release in more bulk than just sitting there. Like some people I've heard them recommend, you just sit there torturing yourself for 5 or 10 minutes, drowning, because the element of water goes with emotion. So you sit there drowning in your emotions. I don't personally think that's all that healthy. And it's also going to, you think you're going to look forward to that? You think you're going to look forward to sitting there drowning in your emotions? So you're going to be less likely to meditate. That's why so many people are so busy. They don't want to feel. But if you have a tool like EFT or, you know, tapping, or you can actually notice and exhale it out and you're pushing, you know, letting it release without judging, then you'll get to a point of equanimity where you're not carrying this baggage. Like I don't go to sit in meditation and then get into anxiety. I used to, but it's like you've cleared it out, and day by day you might have situations come up, but then you shake it off. You notice it, you see, is this something I need to know here? Am I thinking something that's stirring this up? Is this something that's come up in my awareness for me to heal? I mean, you can go through that. so your emotional guidance system, you don't want to ignore it, but do know that if you practice meditation enough, you clear your system and you're doing these things for physical and emotional and mental health, and you're sleeping and you are mindful of playing and you're eating good food, and now your relationships are even getting better, and you know, et cetera. All of that is part of a new paradigm. It's the way your brain is now seeing the world. We, you know, love ends suffering. I will say that. Now, love ends suffering. Fear promotes suffering. Fear and separation, lack, you know, focus on that. That creates this paradigm. So I don't think humans are as bad as the rap we get. I think it not innately. However, if you think these ways, you feel these ways, and then it genetically affects your gene pool, epigenetically, yeah, it's kind of like the cycles are going on and on. But the question is, can you break it? Can enough people break it that we shift the paradigm? And I will just say that I believe we're in a time and space that is like the universe is conspiring to help us to deal with this problem. And before the light comes to, you know, there's the storm and the dark. And what we're witnessing is a lot of the things that were always there, they were just repressed and hidden. And now it's come out. So as an individual, you can't control all that stuff, but you can actually contribute service to humankind by, number one, dealing with yourself. That'll make you happier. And then you're shifting the vibe, which shifts the field, because we're all interconnected.
That's a beautiful message. That's an important message for all of us to hear.
And I think a lot of people, I don't know if we can answer that. That's a very big question, just a warning. But I think we, like you said, we live in times where more and more people are waking up and they're starting to ask really tough questions, such as, who exactly am I? And what am I doing here? And people become aware of all these conditionings and all these questions to a point that one may wonder, is it really my life that I'm inspiring or desire to achieve? Or maybe it's just somebody else's idea. But then they find themselves at a point, where do I go from here? Am I getting crazy? Do you have any practical advice or some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. So imagine this 30 years ago, and I'm going through just what you just described. It was lonely, okay? It was hard. It was lonely. I couldn't even talk to my husband about it for fear he thought I was crazy. He thought I was crazy when I started meditating. You know, he opened the door, looked in and said, I didn't know you better, I'd be concerned. He shut the door. I laugh about it. But I have in my gene key, this gene key that is like the warrior of the light. And in its shadow, it's about perseverance. It's about struggle and the fighter. But in its gift, it's perseverance. And in its city, it's higher spiritual vibration. It's honor, knowing what's worth fighting for. And I'd say that it was a self-defense mechanism, because I know where it sits in my gene key. It sits in this sphere of a mental self-defense mechanism. So there is this balance between fate and destiny, I believe, where we don't have to do it. You know, it's not like you're going to get the stronghold, like you better go do your life work. It's just that most of us come in here with this kind of design of intention. And then we get derailed by all the conditioning and the gaslighting and all the social herd holding you in. So you do have to get to a certain level of courage, because it's not that the fear won't be there. You have to have some courage. Now, here's what I know for me. I was designed to be a forerunner. And that's one reason why I had potential extra grace, because when I hit that dark night of the ego, okay, really, I don't know if it's so much a soul, I think it's the ego. I could have checked out. I could have jumped off a bridge or whatever. Thank goodness I didn't. And one of the main reason why that helped me there, I kept asking for guidance. I kept asking for help. And this one night I just declared, you know, God, if you don't help me, I'm going down. And you may not know which way to turn, but the first step, I believe, is to ask. Seek and you shall find. So there is this place of humility where you have to realize that the ego can't help itself. It's part of the problem. The ego is not bad. It's just limited to the 5D, and it's very, very easy to program when you're out of awareness. And mind you, this has been going on since you were born, right? So you're told how to see the world. You're told how the world is. So part of it is, if you start with this sense of, okay, I'm going to learn how to love and accept myself intrinsically in here and seek this greater power, whatever that means for you, to help me, because that's what's going to be the foundation to help you have the courage to unplug, for one thing. But then it's harder to do. I mean, they're coming at this stuff is coming at you so intensely these days that if you could be drawn to a community of support, not as a guru, the guru is dead as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's more like you need to go inside for your guru, so to speak, but find a community that is like-minded to support that. And maybe someone in the community, that's what I, you know, if I've been at this 30 years, I do have a head start. That doesn't mean I'm perfect. That doesn't mean that I'm still not growing. I am, you know, like the playful child. I'm still expanding her, because she's actually a part of that big heart of love that can help, you know, radiate this kind of healing space. But it is a healing space. So if you can find communities, and that is why I was unfolded Well Whole and Wise. You know, I was like intuitively in meditation, the name of the program is Well Whole Wise. Okay, I'm like, wow, that's a good idea. So, you know, to the degree that you can tap into that inner self, find a community of support. And for me, my trust is not so much as in that person. My trust is vertically and internally to this divine source. And understanding my emotions make it less scary. Because now it's like, I'm not just trying to make sure I don't get hurt. I don't get hurt. If somebody disappoints me, I'm going to ask myself, what was my expectation projected on that person in the first place? Use your intuition and judgment as to who you confide in. Don't just go worrying everything on, you know, your sleep if you're concerned. Most of the things I share, at one time I couldn't even share them because I was in the drama of them. You know, I was believing I was a victim. I was believing I, you know, was having pain about this. But as that healed and I became more objective, that's where that equanimity comes in. So I can talk about things that might seem like sensitive to some people. There is no more power over me but that story. It's just a story. If anything, honestly, I'm more concerned about protecting the people who are involved in the story than me feeling ashamed about something or whatever it is, because it's been healed. It's like there's no emotional pain on it anymore. So there is in answering your question, some of this is just courage. You gotta have some courage to take the risk. Some of it is a process of making friends with feelings and loving yourself so that you're less vulnerable to constriction when something does happen. And then you actually develop more ability to be vulnerable because you're less protected. You know, you feel less shameable, so to speak. Part of it is just like getting certain people out of your life because they're toxic to you. They don't want to grow. And they're going to hold you back and they're going to judge you and, you know, on and on and on. Right. So I would just say see it as an adventure, as in a journey. That's the container I'm holding for Well Whole and Wise, to help people understand how to operate their brain and nervous system, to not be hijacked so easily, to guard their attention and focus, to understand core beliefs, to understand how you are artificially trying to control something you can't. You know, all of these dynamics come in. And allowing other people to be and stop trying to project on them and judge them. You don't want people doing that to you, right? You want to be able to be free. So it's all of those things. But in community, I think it takes on a life of its own. It's like there's you and me, and then there's this whole container. And that container is like this, this spiritual power. At least that is in my container. I'm not holding the space, not Valencia. It's the power through me as I'm, you know, purifying my heart and shadows and doing my best to come from a place of love and not fear and judgment.
That is a beautiful, beautiful message. Thank you. I think more people need to hear it. And I'm so happy we had the opportunity just to share it so people can hear and the words would sink there where they need to.
Yeah, it'll sink where they need to. Thanks. Yeah, well, I've enjoyed speaking with both of you and hopefully our paths will continue to cross again. And, you know, remember those 5 R's of re-educate, recalibrate, revise your story, restore balance. And really, top of that list, really, even though I listed as the 5th, is remember who you really are. And that is going to go a long, long way.
Thank you so much for sharing so much wisdom, so much beauty with the world.